The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it. You must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast. One of the hosts thinks if you have to hire a coach, it means you've been a bad boy. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. He had a dog trainer. It helped a little bit. He still barks a lot. You've met him. Maybe you can vouch.
Yeah, I think Lenny needs a therapist, not a trainer, to work through his issues.
So we're going to talk about coaching hires later and the Indianapolis Colts in the second half of this podcast. But I wanted to start off, as always, by talking about Monday night's game, Dominique. So here's my first thought. The Ravens have played a lot of weird games this year, have had a lot of crazy things, you know, meltdowns, whatever, incredible comebacks. This was just a very normal beatdown. This is just one team being a lot better at football than the other team. Just starting there. I mean, the discrepancy was pretty obvious.
It's the like foundation of football stuff. If you can run the ball and play defense, you're going to be all right. And that's what they did all night. They ran the ball effectively. Looked like the old Ravens. They played less aggressive old Ravens defense, but just as effective old Ravens defense. A lot of pass rush, sacks, and pressure. Good coverage downfield. Andy Dalton had flashbacks of his Bengals days, and it was just a good old-fashioned beatdown. And it's not – the Saints aren't a bad team. It wasn't like they beat up on a bad team. They beat up on a team that's
– Yeah. We just saw down another team dramatically. Yeah.
The Ravens.
Well, let's talk about the Ravens' defense first, because I think that perhaps is the more interesting development in some ways. I mean, we'll talk about Lamar Jackson in a second, who's obviously playing without Mark Andrews and – Rashad Bateman is out for the season. But, you know, this is a defense that through the first 4 weeks of the season looked bad, right? Like, I mean, I would say, you know, the Patriots game, the meltdown against Miami had me really rethinking, is this team actually a contender? Because coming into the season, we thought they've got this new defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald. They got a lot of talent, especially in the secondary. Let's see how they look. And through the first few weeks of the season, they were bad. So, I believe, been improving every week since then. What would you attribute that improvement to for the most part?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like switching systems is the easy explanation to it. Yeah. It's like you got to get comfortable. There are a lot of things that happen that are second nature. You don't have to talk about, you don't have to work through when you are comfortable in a system that you've been playing for a long time. And then there's a lot of things that you have to learn. And I think getting comfortable with those things is the explanation. Like, when you see blown coverages is something that was a big like hallmark of this defense early in the season. You don't see those anymore. That suggests that they didn't know what they were doing, you know, and they've addressed those issues and it seems like they've got it figured out. And it's two like very different styles of defense. I guess Wink Martindale's defensive style is very different from everybody's defensive style. So adjusting to that is going to take some time. And I think I would be more concerned about this team if they were younger. You know, like, it would feel like we don't know who they are, but it kind of, like, you know, like, it kind of feels like it makes sense. Like, they were just learning, switching, and developing in there, and they are a pretty good team with a lot of talent and veterans that can figure it out.
Well, speaking of age, I mean, this is, like, the best pass rush of 2013, right? Like, Calais Campbell, JPP, yes. Justin Houston turning back the clock. That to me has also been probably a big factor. I think what you said about the secondary in particular, you know, those busted coverages we saw earlier on disappearing is significant. But also the pass rush was like non-existent through the first few weeks of the season. And I wouldn't say they have one of the better pass rushes in the NFL, but it has started to heat up in recent weeks. And some of that is just the standard rush. I think, you know, Houston in particular is playing exceptionally well. And I think unlocking Odafe Owe a bit. We'll see if they get David Ojabo, who was their draft pick, who tore the Achilles for Michigan back. But also, it's pretty creative up front. And that was, I think, something we expected out of Mike McDonald. You know, he's not Wink Martindale, where he's going to blitz 50% of the time. But when they do blitz, it always looks a little bit different. That was something that jumped out to me in this game. The first sack I loved where Houston was occupied by the guard and the tackle, the left guard and left tackle, and then you had Queen blitzing and Amara Alvin Kamara meets him, who's in pass pro, and then Houston loops around for the sack. Or then you had Marlon Humphrey, I think, had the second sack, if I remember correctly. And then the third one, Roquan Smith showed pressure, then dropped out. They use a lot of simulated pressures, muddied the picture for Andy Dalton sack. And I think, you know, you're talking about the back end working together. We're also seeing this defensive front getting better at working together to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, and what you see with the reason why this, like, I think you said 2014, this would have been the Pro Bowl defensive line.
So
you,
good.
You tend to, like, talk about aging players as they can be the player we remember less often, but they still have it in them. If you got a bunch of them, they just got to make sure they time up their time up their peaks, like their turn back the clock moments, so that they always have one of them. And Justin Houston decided to have one on Monday night. Maybe next week it'll be, well, I guess Calais had a good game too, but maybe next week Calais will get a bunch of practice. Yeah, he's
not always like good.
Yeah, he's not always jump off the screen, but yeah, he's just always like a problem because he's big and athletic. He's one of those special athletes that you're like, that's not fair. Like, gives you Jadavian Clown, not even Clown, he's bigger than that, more like Myles Garrett vibes. It's like, why are you so big, and why are you, like, your frame is that of an athlete, but your size is that of a nut. It's a giant.
I had a chance to meet him in person for the first time at the Super Bowl this year, and I was just kind of like, when he stood up, and then I stood up, I was like, I've been around football players. I've never been around a human being shaped this way, kind of. Like, yeah. it just doesn't make sense. Something occurred to me. I want to throw this out for you. The Ravens' front is pretty cheap, and they've invested a lot in their secondary. What do you think of that approach generally, having a younger, they got draft picks as well, higher paid secondary, and then maybe leaning on veterans up front? Because, you know, edge rusher and defensive tackle, I think, are a position that ages better than cornerback and safety. So maybe there's something there from a bigger picture.
Yeah, I think there definitely is. I think from a, like, talent or, cap allocation standpoint, spending your money in the secondary is never a bad idea. The only time I think that it's risky is, like, if you miss. Because, like, those are issues. And I guess that's why, like, Humphrey is proven. Humphrey is proven. And Peters is, who's also, he's an older, proven guy. I think spending the money there, like, injuries you can't predict. But spending the money there is a smart place to spend the money, because it's a hard thing to address and develop otherwise. But I do think that up front, so it feels like it's kind of the opposite of, like, the 49ers. More than anything, I think it's like, it's like, invest in one thing, if that makes sense, which is not
be
like
dominant in an area.
Yeah. And we've talked about this a bunch of times, is like, just my general philosophy, if I can call it that, offense and defense, is like, be really good at one thing. And then you can, like, find ways to compensate off of that or build off of that. And it's clear that, like, that they have invested in their secondary. They drafted a safety. They brought in more safeties than we thought that they needed, but they're finding ways to use them all in two, like, number one level corners. And then you can, like, figure it out elsewhere.
They've also now invested in linebacker. And I guess that's the final thing I want to talk about with the defense. You know, Roquan Smith's debut comes out, like, literally in the first series. That third down run stop he had was kind of his welcome to Baltimore moment. But I was really curious to see what he would do for the rest of the defense. And I thought the early results were super encouraging because he is so good at so many things, coverage, blitzing, tackling. It enables the rest of the unit to play a little bit freer. Notably, I thought this was one of Patrick Queen's best games as a pro. And it's, to me, not surprising. Of course, you bring in one of the best, you know, off-ball linebackers in the league. Of course, he's playing a little bit freer. And I really liked seeing the two of them play together. And I think it's going to pay dividends throughout the season.
Yeah, Roquan Smith's coverage was really impressive in this game to me on Alvin Kamara. And, like, Roquan's a guy who, like, you know is good. You hear is good. You see him every now and then, but you don't watch a lot because they haven't been relevant, yeah. but like watching him and really keying in on him because it was a trade. So yeah, I get why you would go after this guy, because again, it speaks to the idea of taking pressure off of other places. Is Roquan can carry, and you don't have to, like, when you go up against one of these running backs who's effective out of the backfield, you don't have to like dedicate a bunch of players to being like, hey, we got to make sure we play zone because we can't man up on this guy, or we got to in and out him. It gives you more flexibility elsewhere.
It just kind of go back to what I talked earlier about Mike McDonald, who likes those simulated pressures. He's kind of like the perfect linebacker for that, because he can blitz and he can cover so well. And that's going to be, when you think about teams like the Bills, you know, simulated pressures are one of the rare things that Josh Allen has struggled with. So having that in your pocket, as the Ravens do now, is pretty significant.
Yeah. And they took Roquan out in dime, too, which kind of surprised me. I guess it's just because he's still learning things. But, like, that's one of the things that when you're – we talked about last week, one of the really important things was the 49ers and their flexibility with their offensive personnel. A guy like Roquan Smith is a guy that would take that stress away from you. And where you're like, all right, fine, put Christian McCaffrey out there. Roquan will be comfortable in space. All right, put him in the backfield. Roquan's fine with that. And so many other teams are like, man, we're going to have to put a safety in. And then they're like, fine, put a safety in. We'll smash right in your face with this safety trying to play linebacker. So Roquan gives them some flexibility.
Hamilton's been good, too, in their dime packages, the first-round pick, Kyle Hamilton. Increasingly, I notice him more and more every week. Obviously, he had the interception that didn't count in this game, but he's been better in coverage every week, too. So Ravens defense, arrow pointing up. Ravens offense ran the damn ball. Not sure what else there really is to say about it. They were missing a lot of players, obviously. I thought the offensive line looked dominant run blocking. That was kind of my big takeaway.
Yeah, they looked dominant run blocking. They ran the damn ball. Lamar's special. He like pushes linemen out the way because they're taking too long, and then juke
that was amazing.
Matthew and still, yeah, like he's just oh my God. Special player. Even in a game like this where the numbers aren't like eye popping, which I guess 80 yards as a quarterback rushing should be eye popping, but it's not for Lamar. It's still like if you watch, he's one of those players that like if you watch the games, you're like, oh my gosh, there's one guy that's different than everybody else, and the injuries, this team, like, I feel like they always have a lot of, like, key injuries. I don't know what it is, but without Andrews and without Bateman, they still were able to produce. And, I mean, that's the scary part for them in the playoffs is if they can drag somebody into their playing their style, then they can beat anybody. But if their defense makes a couple early mistakes and they're trailing, we're going to have to listen to people say Lamar can't bring them back when in actuality, like, look at the rest of the good quarterbacks in the league. Look who they have to throw to.
I mean, like, I pride myself in knowing a lot of NFL players' names. I was like, who's 13? Who's 10? Like, these Ravens pass catchers, I don't remember. Likely 80 always jumps out to me now. But like, I'm like, I think that's James Prochet. I guess that's too bad. Like, I just, he is... Yeah.
That's the thing about like the playoffs that I worry about is, like, we're going to have this conversation. We're going to have to listen to people say he can't win the big one because he can't pass from the pocket. And then he's going to be playing against, like, Josh Allen, who his top two receivers are better than every receiver. I mean, maybe even more than that, every receiver that Lamar has to throw to. And the same is probably true for Kansas City. I guess maybe if they get Tennessee, we can have an old school slobber knocker and no receivers can catch the ball.
Tennessee is like the one team that I would really actually think would give them a lot of trouble on defense. But
yeah.
Did you see I posted the dots of the Isaiah Likely touchdown where he leaked behind?
Yeah, I saw it with the gravity.
It just was like Lamar Matthew rolls again, right. Yeah. It was Tyrann Mathieu, who had a bit of a rough one. Lamar rolls right, and literally the entire Saints defense is, like, pulled with him. That's why I like the dots, and you can really, like, see that visually. It's so insane. It's wild.
When we were talking about on Get Up this morning, I said that it was he's a walking play-action touchdown, but in actuality, that's a halfback pass. Like, that's a trick play. Like, the reaction to that defense is like you pitched it to someone. You know what I'm saying?
And like the way that it happened in real time, I thought it was play action because I was like, they're really fooled. And then when I watched it again, I was like, oh my, like Because he's a human. Yeah, like you said. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's like that's crazy. if you were like to use AI to go through all the plays in history of football to find a defense react like that, it would be a halfback pass. It would be a pitch, and everyone got sucked up, and you throw it down, and that's because Lamar is he's better than most running backs at running back. So of course they're gonna respond like that to him.
Let's talk quickly about the Saints. Dennis Allen said after the game that I think he said they're either sticking with Andy Dalton or it was like a rough day at the office. Unfortunately, it's his second rough day in prime time. Not that Andy Dalton is in a terrific position there either with some of the limitations that offense has. Would you go back to Winston?
I don't Does think it, matter? It matters. Yeah, yeah, but sure. I mean, I guess the Winston is upside. Like high risk, high reward. Like Winston's going to throw a pick for every touchdown he throws. You just hope that he can give you a couple games where there's few turnovers. Like they're going to be more exciting and impressive offensively, but also put their defense in tough situations. So since their defense is talented, I guess that seems like the better recipe is like we have a guy that's going to get us some points, but he's also going to give you a short field sometimes. So that feels like it makes more sense. But Calais Campbell tried to make that decision real easy for Dennis Allen. My God, we talked about how big he was, hit Andy Dalton in the back. Oh, gosh. And he's his really neck snap. Painful. Yeah, I'm sure once by the time Andy got his bearings, he wanted to play football again. But at that moment, that very moment when he got hit, he thought, "What? Why am I here? I want to be home."
Yeah, put in Jameis. Jameis, bad back. God, that would have been awful. Yeah. It's hard to not feel like the Saints are kind of out of it. I think, you know, you feel good about, first of all, Chris Olave, again, fantastic. I love watching him play. He already is such a, like, professional route runner. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just so smooth. But like, when you watch the TV copy, he just is open, but then when you go back and watch, he's he can run every route, and
these guys are so good, man.
Use of leverage, I mean, he's just, his ability to modulate his speed, he's just a very, very, very good wide receiver. He's the number one, you know, so you feel good about that. But you know, for a team that did invest a lot into this season, I guess it's the NFC South, so anything can happen, but I don't know. The defense has really been underwhelming. Let's talk about the defense for a second, just kind of wrap it up here. I really, like, you know, Lamar's a very unique challenge, and I think most teams will struggle and run defense against the Ravens for various reasons. But I guess it feels like some of the choices they've made in free agency and whatnot have just not paid off for them.
Yeah, I mean, the saddest thing about this team is that they don't have a first-round pick. And they gave it to the Eagles. So, like, as bad as things are, in a year where there are quarterbacks in the draft, they're not going to get one. And the Eagles, of all teams, the Eagles, freaking Howie Roseman is going to get their stinking first round pick. Times like this, I'm glad I don't, like, really root for any team. Like, that would infuriate me if I was like, oh my gosh, the freaking Eagles again.
Yeah. Saints feel like a team that just needs to take a flyer on like a second or something and see if they can develop them. It's almost, you know, I don't know. It's hard to even, obviously we all thought losing Sean Payton would be huge, and I think it has been huge, but, and you know, probably with Payton, this team would have like a couple more wins just scrapping them out, you know, but it's hard for me to think that they would be competitive. Even like the pass rush is underwhelmed a little bit. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something more optimistic to say. I had Chris Olave. I've been like, my brain's been like, say something else nice about the Saints. I mean, NFC South, I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. The NFC South is the most positive thing you can say about them. I do think the Chris Olave point is a good one, but I'm sorry to bring it down again. Chris Olave is really good, but it feels like there's so many good wide receivers coming in a league
There are.
that are professional route runners already, and it feels like they don't have the unique player that's going to put them over the top. I guess it's Taysom Hill is the guy that they're
let's,
like,
let
hey,
me actually
we have
wrap
somebody.
Here. Would you consider just leaning into a wackadoodle Taysom Hill offense?
Why not? I mean, I wouldn't, because I don't think – I think when people say
it.
That – yeah. Like, and when people say that Taysom Hill – when people say that Taysom Hill is a Swiss Army knife, it feels more true than when you say it about other players, because the Swiss Army knife is like – it does a lot of things, but it's not great at anything. Like, you would rather have a real knife or a real fork or a real corkscrew, and that's how I feel about Taysom Hill. And that's the thing about, like, a wackadoo Taysom Hill offense is – the closest version we have of that is the Lamar Jackson offense, right? Is like you would try to do something similar to that to utilize his running ability. He ain't that special at that. You know, like it's not enough to build around, I don't think. So, yeah, I don't know. It's more like, honestly, the perfect example, I don't know why to say it, is Tim Tebow. Like he seems like he passes a little better than Tim Tebow, but the offense would look like something that you would do with Tim Tebow, and that's not... it's not worth getting excited about.
Nail file works pretty well on the Swiss Army knife. You probably never used it, but...
Yeah, but you wouldn't rather just have a real nail file?
Yeah, I don't know. One more nice thing. I mean, maybe Trevor Penning will be that dude when they get to see, you know, obviously he's not playing, but that was the other...
Food's really good in New Orleans. Great food.
Let's take a quick break, come back, and try to turn this around.
Etouffee.
All right, people, we are brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. See, it's not just about the daily promos, odds boosts, or the hundreds of ways to wager. It's about the immortal words of Caesar himself. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Every bet you place on the app, no matter the outcome, earns towards exclusive perks at Caesars Rewards destinations everywhere. Hotel stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. Download the Caesars Sportsbook app, become a Caesars Rewards member today, and get more with every wager. Must be 21 years or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700. At 5-Hour Energy, they stan the fan. From the new-to-football fans to the born-for-the-love-of-the-game lifers, they know fandom isn't just a hobby, it's a way of life. We're talking about the fans who are born to fan. In fact, 79% of professional football fans have been fans of their favorite team since they were born. Enter the superfans, the unofficial captains of the fan base, known for outlandish antics, hearts of gold, and passion on top of passion. They're leading the charge for their teams and for their cities. It's about their deep love for their community. It's about pride in their colors. It's about rooting for their team no matter what. No matter what team you root for, 5-Hour Energy knows being a fan requires heart, soul, and a whole lot of energy. That's why they've created a limited edition Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy to keep you fueled throughout the season. Available on 5hourenergy.com, shipped nationwide. That's the number 5hourenergy.com. It's already been an unforgettable football season, so don't miss the action and score the hottest deals on tickets with Vivid Seats. Slap on the face paint and hit the stadium. Enjoy unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and exclusive birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, we're excited to offer you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code MENA20. That's code MENA20. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. All right, Dominique, you sent in winners and woofs on time this week. They were ones that you had done
on time.
Before.
I always send them on time. They just aren't good most of the time.
What one of the woofs, which is the Colts, we're going to, spoiler alert, we should probably talk about a little bit longer than the others, so we'll breeze through the other ones. Who's your winner?
I think it's the Jets. And as much as I want to talk, why is that funny?
Is this going to be a classic Dominique winner where it turns out to be kind of an egg?
No, No, it's the opposite. As much as I want to talk about Sauce Gardner and he deserves our love and respect, I think that DJ Reed is not getting as much love and respect as he deserves because he's playing really, really well too. And like, he's not a rookie coming in with a lot of hype. His first name is not Sauce, or I guess his nickname is not Sauce. And I don't want to take anything away from Sauce Gardner. He deserves all the respect and love that we're going to heap on him. But I think the defense is the reason why they won this game against the Bills. And it's the reason why they are competitive and they win most of their games is defense first. Yep. They hit the shit out of people too. Like watching this, this was one of the games that I watched after I knew the result, which I find is like a really helpful way to get insight. So I'm watching this game and watching the Jets and looking specifically at their defense because I saw the final score. And it just from the start to end, they are physical as hell, and that wears on teams. And also, DJ Reed, week in and week out, I've been thinking this for a while. He's not getting the attention or credit he deserves. He's playing really well opposite Sauce.
He was really good in Seattle, too.
I didn't follow him as
well. I was sad. That was an outlaw, big loss to not have him. I mean, he signed a pretty sizable contract with the Jets, and it's totally paid off. I think just to your point, like watching them week after week, there's playmakers at every level. And there's no real like weaknesses on it. I don't think they're the best defense in the NFL or even the AFC necessarily, but they're definitely top six at this point to me, I would say. I don't know why I went six and seven. I don't know. I six
like
felt
six,
safer than five because I just
remember
it's
my
moment.
College number. It's a good number.
Yeah, it just they're just very complete. I really like the pat. You know, I've talked about the defensive line and what they're doing up front with four, and that was certainly on display here. But they're really enabled by the coverage. Like, there's a lot of coverage sacks with this team, and they play really well together. I think the pass rush and the coverage. You know, it's primarily a zone team. Oh, they're playing a lot of man against Buffalo. And then they stopped. But they just all seem well coached. I don't know. It's not that exciting to say. But and all the defensive linemen, dude, are playing out of their minds. Like, I think I mentioned Jonathan Franklin Myers, the defensive lineman whose name sounds the most like a dead U.S. president, crushing it.
It does. I mean, Quinnen Williams is like the star of this unit, the cutest monster you ever want to meet. But I think you're right. The coverage has been so impressive. And the Gardner, like the double move he got beat on early in the game, the ability to bounce back from that, like that's vintage cornerback stuff that you need to be able to continue to play and play well and then have like a outstanding interception, not overcompensate, not get nervous and like then like play deep like that. As a corner, I'm familiar with that feeling. You give up a big pass early and then for the rest of the game you're like, you know what, I'm not playing aggressively on anything else. And like, he has a confidence, especially when you're a young corner, but he has a confidence to continue to play aggressively and play well throughout the course of this game, and then to do it in cover two. Your point about them playing some man was something that I didn't think about that much is because I watched them more closely this year than I have ever, honestly, the Jets defense, and I was shocked at the amount of zone that they played and also how effective they are. And in this game, they played a little bit more man, in part probably because they have the personnel to do it, and Josh Allen, back when he struggled, he struggled against beating man coverage. So yeah, it all comes down to me, honestly, is those two corners. As good as Quinnen Williams is and as impressive and physical as Mosley and the linebackers are, like having those corners to be smart enough to play. And one thing about the double move that he gave up to Stephon Diggs is being able to play cover three aggressively is something that you as a Seahawks fan are familiar with, but it's a hard thing to do. And if you can do that, because cover three is, frankly, coverage. Like, there's holes in it.
It's easy to beat.
But if you have guys who understand route combinations, understand down distance, are very smart. Like, they know when to take those chances. Sauce was wrong that first time, but Sauce is right most of the time. And that really helps the way this defense is played. Yeah. And one thing about the – oh, sorry. Never mind. I'm rambling.
No. What were you going to say? One thing about what?
The offense is what I see, like, the thesis for the Bills, or, like, their mission statement on every game. To me, the way that their roster is built and the way that they play in games is, like, can you outscore us? We're going to force you to throw the ball. And their strategy, it feels like to me, is we're going to score early and get up, because their team is built, their defense is obviously built to play two high safeties with two really good safeties and a lot of good pass rushers and less talent at corner. Well, and
two of safeties, yeah.
Yeah, so their safeties are gone, but I'm just saying in general, like, their safeties were out of this game. But in general, that's how I think their philosophy is set up, is they want to put you to make you have to pass. They got up 14 on the Jets, and I think that I want to give the Jets credit for being smart enough to not chase it, but I also think that it was fear of Zach Wilson, and they're like, "Hey, we just gonna keep it slow," and they work their way back into the game.
I think the run game is good enough and creative enough to actually take that tactic in a lot of games. And then, you know, Zach Wilson, to his credit, was getting the ball out really quickly and just being a point guard and doing what everyone's been begging him to do. But, like, that final drive where they just ran the ball a zillion times, they ran, like, the same counter run three times in a row with James Robinson on that drive. A lot of that, I do think, was about the absence of Matt Milano. And this was, like, the Matt Milano MVP, Bills MVP game, because they could not stop the run there. But I do think that there's a little bit of a formula with New York that's emerging. And, you know, just because this defense looks really good, they're going to be competitive in a lot of games, and that's really fun. All right. So my woof, we'll do my woof, and then we'll actually, sorry, I'm a little bit up against it, guys, because I have to catch a flight. My woof is the Indianapolis Colts. And did you watch the press conference announcing our?
I saw clips. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I think I probably saw the important parts.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk to you about, obviously, the hire, and you and I talk a lot about coaching hires and diversity and all of that, but I think, first of all, I just take the Colts, because if you're a Colts fan watching that, I'd think, damn, we're screwed because of the owner. Like, forget, you know, we don't know how long Jeff's going to have this job. He said, you know, we don't know what's going to, I mean, Chris Ballard's going to keep his job, which I think Chris Ballard probably deserves more criticism than any of the coaches for what we're seeing, but that's neither here nor there. But the owner looks so impulsive and illogical, and I don't trust that guy to make good decisions, and he hasn't made good decisions. So I think that, to me, was, like, the most alarming part about all of this, just seeing him talk.
Yeah, I mean, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Sometimes the sun shines on a dog's. Like, that's the optimism I can give to Colts fans, because watching, and I mean, they know who he is. He's not new to them, but he's had a hell of a year. It feels like a hell of a season for him. A couple seasons, if you go back to last year, when apparently he had, like, disdain for Carson Wentz and was like, get him the heck out of here. So, and then the Ellinger decision, and then the words about Dan Snyder, and then fired Frank Reich.
That was a W. And he had one W there. The Dan Snyder.
That's one. But I just mean, it's like, it's eventful. And then he hires Jeff.
Yes.
And that, I am not opposed to outside the box thinking generally. So I, as much as I had this conversation earlier in the season when the offensive coordinators for the Patriots were not guys with offensive experience, and my response was, these ain't geniuses. Like, these coaches will figure it out, and the Patriots offense will be fine. It won't be like, oh my gosh, it's a disaster. I would feel the same way about this head coaching situation. If Jeff had some experience outside of high school, you know, like, that's a, it's such a steep learning curve. And if anybody can do it, our friend Jeff can. But it's a hard job to do. And we can get to all the other social, political stuff later. But just in general,
especially to
asking
come in
a whole lot of
on a bad team, a team that knows they're bad. It's really, he's not being set up well here, for just in terms of this season. I said this on First Take earlier. I don't know. The one thing I've learned is I have no idea who's going to be good at being a head coach. I have total humility approaching this subject now, because you and I have talked about hires for years now. Who the hell knows what works, what doesn't, why? And like you, I think leadership and management are underrated qualities, as well as open-mindedness. And that's something I just want to say about Jeff before we get to the critical side of this. Everyone at ESPN's been talking about how, like, kind and smart and knowledgeable about football he is. He's also one of the most open-minded people I've ever worked with. Mina Kimes, that matters a lot in my interactions from working. So I think he has, like, the makeup for it, so whatever. It's a tough job. He lacks experience. He has some qualities I think are great, and is just an A-plus human being. Everybody is also correctly upset about the process here, because this is Exhibit A for... It's not just the only reason why there's a pretty pathetic amount of diversity amongst coaching ranks, but when we try to explain it, other than just saying a blanket racism, when we look at some of it, which is, but when we look at how it like what happens, I guess, in action, one of the things that comes up time and time again is the network effect, the relationships, the fact that these opportunities are given to white coaches with less experience, and it is impossible to ignore the fact that pretty much all of those things clearly apply in this particular decision, in this process.
And also, Jeff may be great, but we cannot get away from the fact that this way this process went. The one thing that I got a little bit of humor out of is thinking about a lot of white coaches probably feel like black coaches normally feel right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, black coaches sitting around, like,
Jess Bradley, they are. John Fox.
Yeah, exactly. Black coaches are normally sitting around, and occasionally you'll see somebody like Cliff Kingsbury, and I suspect that there are a lot of black coaches that are like, what the hell? Things like that happen. Or, like, Staley, like, comes out of nowhere and is a head coach. And then all these other, like, wannabe, like, McVay people who don't have a ton of experience, which then all of a sudden, just like Irsay said, now coaching experience is bad because it makes coaches scared. How do you feel if you're John Fox and he's like, nah, we're not going to promote you because you've been here too long. You're probably scared.
You might listen to analytics.
Yeah, he took a straight at analytics. What are you talking about? Almost as wild as when he said, I don't know how to make sausage. What? Who asked you to make sausage? It's just... Anyway, the point I was trying to make, I don't know anymore. It's frustrating. But yeah, this is the issue with the process, is no matter how many Rooney rules you institute, it comes down to a decision that's going to be made by one person. And that one person either has conscious or subconscious biases that the statistics fully support.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good summary of the root cause of all of this. It's, it's not a meritocracy.
Nope.
Anyone who thinks it is lying to themselves. It always makes me laugh how, like, people are so critical of owners, rather, in their decision-making, but then when you suggest that, like, they're not, a meritocracy, and they're like, well, how dare you question my owner here? And it's like, yo, you them all the time. Like, these guys are human. They make bad choices. And by the way, I don't want to go back to, like, what you just said and what I just said, which is we're not saying that Jeff is. We're just talking about this is just a thing that happens over and over and over, and this is a pretty egregious example of it. I mean,
Jeff got a call from a crazy man and said, hey, you want to be a head football coach? And he said yes, just like all the rest of us were.
I would love to hear from Jeff, just like, I don't know, man. This is a tough thing to walk into. But he is, he likes a challenge. I'm not going to pretend that I'm not going to be rooting for him, but we also have to be honest about what this is and why people are upset. And I get it. I get it. It's also an interim job. How often do interim job coaches become the head coach?
I don't know.
Freddie Kitchens is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah. I don't know. There was some conversation. I mean, it tends to be these bad jobs where it seems like you're just a placeholder. Those are often jobs that go to black coaches, which I guess is...
Which it makes us...
It's like...
It's like, do you want this job?
I don't know. Like, you didn't have a bad resume.
Like the Steve Wilkes, Vance Joseph. But,
Also, I mean, it just... No matter what, it positions you as a head coach.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
it's
like...
Exposure. Yeah.
Right. And now you're thought of as, like, a head coach. And... Like, Dan Campbell got a really outstanding contract with the Lions after having an interim job where he did not have a whole bunch of success with Miami. But now, all of a sudden, he's a head coach. And so, it's an advantage that Jeff gets that Reggie Wayne would not and did not.
Has there ever been, like, what has been the most surprising hire of a black coach ever?
Raheem Morris was really young, wasn't he? Like, I feel like that was a shocker.
Young.
I don't know. The fact that Hugh Jackson got another shot surprised me.
You always bring up Hugh as the counterexample. I'm like, it's one guy. It's rare. It's, you know, like, there have been, I'll just wrap this up. There have been for everyone who's upset about it, there's been numerous studies, professors who have looked at the resumes, records, tenures of black and white coaches, and the results are, they speak for themselves. Black coaches get fewer opportunities. They require more experience to get those opportunities. They're given shorter, less leeway when they get those opportunities. So I don't, this is not a matter of debate. It just is what it is. So that is why we are talking about it. All right. That was my woof. So that's your woof was the Cardinals, right? Speaking of Cliff Kingsbury,
we can skip him.
Just say one reason why. Do you feel like this is it's over? It's it.
I think it's in part because the coach firing has started that Cliff Kingsbury should be on high alert, even though they got him an extension, but. I don't know. They just don't seem to be getting any better. They're not any more formidable. And also, Call of Duty is out, which is funny.
That extension is more egregious than any of the... Because at least if you hire a guy like a Cliff Kings, whatever, you can say, well, we don't know. Y'all knew.
Yeah. It's so weird, given that they had 1 year for Steve Wilkes. They knew that he wasn't the guy immediately. Cliff Kingsbury has given you multiple years of underachieving and is currently underachieving, and you was like, hey, how about you stick around a little longer?
He's really the poster child for this at this point. I feel like it's pretty, especially the extension is just outrageous.
Does this sound familiar? You're a maintenance specialist, and you've been squaring off with a leaky radiator at your facility for hours. You're both drenched in sweat. You've thrown the whole playbook at it, but so far, it's got an answer for everything. What you need is a teammate, a pro who has seen it all before, and that's Grainger. With support specialists always ready to chat, the product you need, plus a million more, just give this ringer a ring. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or stop by one of their local branches. What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and now you're the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities, whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on us and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See att.com/iPhone for details.
Okay, let's wrap on a pleasant note. So my winner is OBJ because, and I could be wrong, maybe he'll sign somewhere cheap, but there are a lot of teams that need wide receivers. There was less wide receiver movement at the trade deadline than many people anticipated. So at the very least, I don't know how much he's going to get paid, but he certainly has his pick. Yeah. He has said, expressed interest in Dallas, which seems obvious. That just seems like the perfect marriage for a number of reasons. He's mentioned talking to the Packers. Ain't no way. Buffalo, that one I can see happening. Yeah. And then the Giants. Which of those four teams... I wanted the Ravens to sign him. I just don't think they will. I don't think he'll go there. Which of those four teams would you like to see him on?
I mean, I think it's Dallas, obviously. Is the one that you feel like it could change things if he's healthy and is some version close to his peak self. You add him to Dallas and that team becomes something different because CeeDee Lamb has not developed into like a top of the league receiver that Odell Beckham is at his peak. So that seems easy. Sending him up to Orchard Park doesn't, I don't know, I guess it'd be fun, but it doesn't change anything to
you
me
think?
As long as, I mean,
Gabe
I
Davis
guess him,
is...
yeah, opposite Gabe, yeah, put him opposite Stephon Diggs. It's two man coverage monsters. Gabe Davis isn't that guy, but I guess when you look at their offensive production at its peak and when they're healthy, I'm not sure that Odell Beckham changes it as much as he does for the Cowboys. If he, again, it's a big if because, yeah, he hasn't worked out for anybody yet. We don't know what he's actually doing.
I would say that I do think the Bills actually need him because they can't run the football consistently at all. Yeah. Dallas can. So they're a bit one-dimensional on offense, which makes this Josh Allen injury all the more concerning, by the way, because he is their leading rusher. So I feel like leaning into being a just dominant bombs away passing attack, especially given that Davis has been a little bit unreliable, mm-hmm. a lot unreliable, frankly.
This should be the strategy, like, for receivers going forward. Like, don't get injured, but become a free agent and then sign a one-year deal at week 10 and then ride it out, get you $15 million, then do it again next year. Just
he was trying to do that last year, but
yeah, oh yeah,
well, it wasn't
injuries.
What he was traded or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, the yeah, I mean, we're also obviously assuming he's still OBJ. Mm-hmm. And what OBJ is a vertical threat, elite route runner, like you said, a man coverage nightmare. To have him as a number two wide receiver,
yeah,
is
he's also like a yak monster. It's like you can throw him a short pass.
Ball in
like
his hands. Yeah.
Yeah. He's everything that you would want from a receiver. And yeah.
This just feels like Jerry's just gonna throw whatever at him.
Yeah.
That's kind of why.
As he should.
All right, Dominique. It's been good chatting. I'll
always
see you next week.
See ya. Safe travels.